Well, environmental advocates say the government's plan to introduce biofuel into petrol and diesel is greenwashing and will actually contribute to an increase in global emissions. From next April, all petrol and diesel will be legally required to contain a percentage of biofuel made from renewable sources such as used vegetable oils or animal fats. The government announced the mandate late last year, promising that over the next 3 years it would prevent around 1 million tonnes of emissions from cars, trucks, trains and ships. This would rise to 10 million tonnes by 2035. Legislation is expected to be introduced in the House in the coming months, although there is no date for that yet. The environmental advocacy group Don't Burn Our Future says New Zealand doesn't have the right kind of waste to make the amount of biofuel that would be required to meet the mandate, and importing biofuel will be damaging to the global environment. To explain, two members of the group, climate change consultant Jake Roos, who's with us from the Kapiti Coast. Kia ora, Jake.
Kia ora.
And welcome to David Keat, who worked in the oil industry for many years in the Middle East, Europe, Asia and in New Zealand, including a senior role at the Marsden Point Refinery. David's in Auckland. Morena, David.
Yeah, good morning. Kia ora.
Jake, what's the main issue with biofuels? On the face of it, a positive idea using renewable biological products to create fuel. What are the hiccups?
The hiccups are that the biofuel, there's no business case for biofuel. It's very expensive compared to fossil fuel. So when governments introduce a mandate, it creates all of this extra demand. And that creates land use change, which is, to you and me, the clearance of rainforest. In the EU, they've had a directive for 12 years, and the calculation on that is it deforested an area the size of the Netherlands to supply palm oil and destroyed 10% of the remaining global orangutan habitat as a direct result of that policy. The sustainable biofuel that the government wants is not available in those quantities. And it has this knock-on effect of terrible destruction around the world.
It's not a new issue. I recall during a previous famine, well over a decade ago now, possibly 12 years ago now, the same issue, that with the best of intentions in trying to find alternative fuels, the actual outcome was the conversion of food-producing areas to biofuel inputs. So what's happened over those 10, 12 years? Has there been any evolution?
There's been a little bit of evolution in the EU. All sorts of environmental groups pointed out what a terrible policy this was and the destruction it was wreaking around the world. And there was some attempt to reform it. And the EU's put more emphasis on feedstocks, which are supposedly sustainable. But analysis of those shows that they're not really sustainable at all, in that if you use them for biofuel, they're not available for other useful purposes, and a substitution occurs. Analysis shows that if you actually applied the waste hierarchy to those feedstocks, those supposedly waste materials, they wouldn't be burnt for fuel, they'd be used for other things.
So let's look at what can be used, because initially it was a substitution of crops, food crops, for producing these inputs. Now, you're talking also about the likes of palm oil, which might be considered to some extent a waste product or a byproduct. But the problem is the clearing of the areas in order to obtain what is now a valuable asset. So what are the potential biofuel sources? Are any of them sustainable?
Well, not really, because of the substitution effect. You need to find genuine waste, which isn't actually being used for something else useful, that people will just go and buy more vegetable oil or whatever it is to do instead. So, for example, in New Zealand, a lot of stock was put in tallow from meat processing, like it was a waste material and that we could burn it without any consequences. But that's just not true. Tallow is highly sought after for all sorts of uses, for soaps and cosmetics, waterproofing, all sorts of things. And it actually commands a really high price. So you would have heard the recent announcement that Zed can't afford to run its tallow plant in South Auckland because it can't obtain the tallow. And even if it was waste material that wasn't being used for anything, there's just not enough of it to satisfy the volumes that the government is going to require under this mandate.
So Zed Energy have tried, but they couldn't find enough inputs either.
Not affordable inputs. No, not even close to it.
The talk about using fish and chip oil, etc. Are there any byproducts?
Yes, it could be that there is fish and chip oil that is just being thrown away in New Zealand because it's too messy to deal with. But the volume we're talking about here is absolutely tiny. And so it's a case of complete overkill to have a mandate like that to find the little bits of chip fat around New Zealand which aren't already being turned into fuel. Some of it is already, in which case there's no benefit anyway.
The so-called second-generation biofuels, the Energy and Resources Minister Megan Woods has talked about the potential for using wood waste from pine slash, which is a huge problem in its own right. What's the potential there?
Well, if you look at the amount of pine slash, it looks quite attractive as a volume of energy. The trouble is actually turning it into a liquid fuel. It is very difficult to do. And the government's own advice, the cabinet paper, the Wood Fibres Futures Project that MB has been running has shown that that's a huge technical challenge, and that to commercialise that technology might be possible with enough government investment, but it would take many years. Whereas this mandate, this obligation is going to start from next year. And also, fuel suppliers try and meet obligations at the lowest possible cost. Why would they use a hugely expensive and risky new technology to satisfy the mandate? It doesn't make any sense.
So if this mandate goes ahead, where will the biofuel be imported from? Well, we won't be importing inputs, if I hear you correctly. It's not possible for any of those, even for Zed, to the best of your knowledge, to import inputs?
New Zealand just imports refined fuels now, as you know. So it would be finished biofuel. Possibly some of the blending would occur because it's only a small percentage of the actual fuel, which is biofuel. The rest is just petrol and diesel because the engines can't handle too much. And the inputs all around the world, who knows? The supply chains will probably be opaque. They won't really know where it's coming from, to be quite honest. It's very hard to figure these things out.
So if we can't be in a situation where one company that has a plant is importing oil, leftover oil or whatever, leftover fish and chip oil or leftover tallow from somewhere else, is the reality going to be that what will be imported is already blended fuels?
I believe so. But whether it's blended here or overseas, it doesn't really make any difference to the climate. The governments in their advice, in their cabinet paper, says they won't be, if they apply strict sustainability criteria, they won't be able to get the volumes that they require. So they definitely, the government is expecting to be putting food crops into our fuel tanks in order to meet these volumes. And those fuel crops come from Malaysia, Indonesia, Brazil, those places.
The United States has a significant supply from corn crop, does it not? Again, it's got heavily subsidised corn growing in that country. Is that actually being used to produce quite a bit of its biofuel?
Yes, so 40% of the corn crop in the United States is turned into fuel, not the husks and the cobs or the stalks, because they're not edible. It's only the edible part, the kernels. And massive industry there. It's what you call pork barrel politics. It doesn't make any sense from an environmental or economic point of view, but it keeps a lot of farmers busy. So there's no appetite to reduce the mandate, the obligation there that puts that fuel into the tanks. But it's not sustainable. Analysis has shown that it's actually increased emissions from all the land use change. Imagine 40% of the corn crop, you know, that all the vast tracts of land in the Midwest devoted to it that might have been prairie before and used for something else. The natural landscapes all turned to corn and monoculture. And no sign at all of all those husks and cobs and stalks being turned, you know, the woody stuff we can't eat, actually being turned into fuel. They had an obligation. They said they wanted that. The government said they wanted it, and the industry completely failed to deliver it. So the government said, don't worry about it.
Stay with us, Jake. David Keat, let me bring you in. You're an engineer. You worked in the oil industry for many years in the Middle East, Europe, Asia, New Zealand, including a senior role at Marsden Point Refinery, as we said, as it was. Why are you so concerned about this biofuel mandate?
Oh, well, first of all, the oil industry is full of greenies, but on a personal story, as you said, I worked all over the world for the oil industry as an engineer. That included 3 years in Borneo and 2 years in West Malaysia. where I saw firsthand clear felling of landscape scale tracts of land for these monocrops. The consequent, often it was virgin rainforest, sometimes it was secondary growth, and driving species like orangutan and the like close to extinction. That is very real. It's very sad to see, and I don't want New Zealand to have any part in that. As well as that, professionally, of course, as an oil engineer, I'm aware of the increase in CO2 emissions and a large number of negative side effects which resulted when Europe, Brazil and North America introduced their mandates, the kind of things that Jake's just gone through.
So explain, by your calculations, how it makes things worse.
Well, biofuels, I think everybody understands the simple concept, which is why the first reaction of anybody to biofuels is that sounds like a good thing. So a plant absorbs carbon dioxide from the atmosphere, it uses it to grow. Eventually it dies, it falls over, it decomposes, and the CO2 is returned to the atmosphere, and that's a virtuous circle. So the idea is you take that plant and you turn it into a fuel and you can burn it, and you speed up the release of the CO2, but otherwise it's that, still that circle. The downside is how much CO2 you have to generate in converting that plant to the fuel, and that's the key crux. So for most plants, by the time you gather it and you chop it up and you process it in some way and then you produce the biofuel and then you transport it to where you're going to blend it into the petrol and diesel, that CO2 either approaches what you would have burnt in the fossil fuel anyway, or it even exceeds it. There are analyses from the EU and other reputable authorities which show that for most biofuels, it's worse than doing nothing. I think, as Jake said, in the European example, if they had never started biofuels, their emissions, well, they produced about three times as much emissions from producing biofuels as if they'd done nothing at all.
Would we be able to blend here, or is there no alternative but to import already blended biofuel or already blended fuel with biofuel in it?
Oh, no. Well, it's up to the Z Energy and the oil companies to do it how they, it makes sense to them. But the standard approach probably is to import the component. So you'd import bioethanol or palm oil, and then you'd blend it here in New Zealand. But you could also import blended fuel. It doesn't make a lot of difference in the end.
Has any of the companies said what they would do? Z, as we said, has this plant. Has it said what it will do?
The only thing I've seen myself in the media is that Zed's obviously abandoned the tallow plant, and I believe they've mentioned importing bioethanol from Brazil. Just to be clear, ethanol is what you would blend into petrol, and you've got a range of vegetable oils which you would blend into diesel.
So the bioethanol will go into petrol, so it would be blended here. Just explain the process.
Oh, it's relatively simple, like mixing drinks. You take...
a lot of drinks, though, David. A lot of drinks at once.
Well, that's the key thing, is the sheer volume required means you're talking landscape scale, like, you know, areas the size of an American state to supply countries the size of America. So you just bring in ethanol, for example, as a pure component. You ship it ashore to a tank, and then you blend it in just as an oil refinery would, in a kind of a recipe at a certain percentage, and you stir it up to mix it, and then you ship out the mix. So at our petrol stations, we would continue to fuel our vehicles just as we do now, and we would think that we're helping the planet and we drive around quite happily. We're increasing the emissions, helping diversion of food into fuel, and contributing to landscape destruction in international locations.
So where will this mixing happen? Because, of course, the oil companies are the shareholders of Marsden Point, which has now lost its refining capacity, another story. But is that the site at which this mixing would happen?
As I understand it, Marsden Point's now supplying Auckland and Northland, and possibly some points slightly south of Auckland, maybe Hamilton area. So there they would import the component to Marsden Point and it would mix it up, just as the oil refinery used to do with other components. For the rest of the country, there are import terminals at the main centres, Wellington, Christchurch and so on. I would imagine they do the mixing there, but you'd really have to ask one of the oil companies what their strategy is.
To each of you, what is the government strategy? What is the Climate Change Commission strategy? Because is the argument, particularly from the Commission, that biofuels will reduce short-term emissions? We have these commitments, we've made these commitments, while better long-term solutions are found. And has it been revealed through Cabinet papers that the government knows there will be a negative impact, at least in the short term?
Could I go first? And then
yes.
Jake could follow up. I just think we have actually spoken to the Climate Change Commission, and they clarified their modelling assumes that the biofuels arrive on shore, and then from then on you burn them. So it's a net gain. Their modelling ignored the CO2 which would be emitted in producing and gathering the biofuels offshore. That's what Jake said.
Well, hang on a minute.
That's
unfortunately, the way our commitments lined up, that's exactly how it happens, isn't it? You are responsible for what happens on your territory. It's why we're in this ridiculous situation of no one being responsible for airline emissions. So to strictly meet our requirements, there is probably a short-term benefit, in inverted commas, to be calculated for New Zealand, is there not?
Well, yeah, but isn't the argument... Oh, sorry, Jake, you go.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's how international greenhouse gas accounting works. You account for what happens within your borders and not beyond it. But obviously, the global climate does not care one jot about national borders. And so we obviously have to take heed of the effect that our policies have. The Climate Change Commission and their advice, they were quite focused on addressing heavy transport, because that didn't seem like something that you could electrify very quickly or easily. So that's why it attracted them to biofuels. And possibly they were thinking about this wood question as well, without really looking into how quickly that industry could be developed, if it could be developed at all.
So again, it's looking for short-term solutions to our challenges to reduce emissions. Your point is whether those short-term solutions are actually counterproductive globally.
Yeah, well, it's the global climate that matters. Climate, you know, it's one big pool of carbon out there in the atmosphere. It makes no sense to just say, well, we're all right here in NZ, while your policy is directly causing massive destruction and massive emissions in other countries.
To each of you succinctly, what should happen? Again, there's this scramble now, given that our emissions curve has done little but go up ever since we ratified Kyoto. There's this scramble now to try and meet commitments. What, in your view, ought to happen if this is not part of the answer, in your view?
We need to implement things immediately that will have a real effect on reducing emissions in the short term, because, as you know, the global climate budget is being burnt through at alarming rate. So that's walking, cycling, you know, intercity passenger rail could be brought back, you know, relatively quickly. Coach services, renewable energy. There's all sorts of things that the government could and should do in the short term to try and turn around that emissions trend. They just have to be a bit bolder about it. For example, at the moment, if a council wants to renew a road, the policy from NZTA funding is like with like. You know, if you've got two lanes of traffic and cars parked on either side of the road, that's exactly what you put in when you go to fix up that road corridor.
So cut gross emissions. Your argument is cut gross emissions, stop trying to do anything else, right? Okay.
Yeah, well, it's gross emissions that matter. Yep. I don't think we should rely too heavily on forests. It's really about stopping those emissions getting up in the air, and conservation is definitely the most effective way.
David, we're getting feedback here from people talking about successful biodiesel pilot in Gisborne for a few years using seaweed. There's a reference to one I was familiar with as well, Blenheim input from Air New Zealand, making fuel from sewage. Others, someone's talking about Sierra Energy's fast ox gasification makes renewable diesel from all waste. Are there projects coming that have the potential at small scale or large scale?
That's all possible. It's not that hard to make fuels from plants. The problem is always the volume, just the sheer volume. So it's just not possible to replace the volumes, even in a small country like New Zealand, without massive land areas being involved in growing the plants to feed that system, whether it's seaweed or otherwise. So those initiatives are great. They should carry on, definitely.
So what's
but they're not going to solve
the problem. So what's your answer to that question of what to do? Yes.
Well, if you just stick The big picture is the whole climate change environment, federated farmers, pine trees, all the rest, right? But for transport fuels, you're talking petrol, diesel, and jet only. Those three things. So for petrol and diesel, you need to electrify the car fleet, plus those alternative public transport and so on items that Jake mentioned. So that's happening anyway because car prices are electric. The car industry is electrifying their fleet, and the prices are pushing people to electric. So that's happening anyway. In parallel, you have to radically increase the generation of renewable electricity. That's not happening in New Zealand because of the structural, the way the industry is structured. The international solution for temperate countries like New Zealand is probably solar coupled with offshore wind, which is happening in the North Sea for European and the Scottish side, North America and so on. So you put in, for example, Scotland's putting in 27 gigawatts of offshore wind as we speak. New Zealand consumes about 10. So offshore wind would electrify the supply, electric cars and trucks electrify the demand, and you have a win-win there. Biofuels delivers almost none of that for a considerable cost and a lot of extra bother and delays the inevitable.
Can you answer?
And I might add, it drives up food and fuel prices as well, globally and locally.
David, can you ask a question? Sorry to throw your curveball at the end, but given your previous experience at Marsden Point when it was a refinery, can you answer the question on another matter, on the matter of fuel sufficiency in a crisis, probably a war? Is it possible to produce even a very small percentage of fuel at Marsden Point using Taranaki crude in the absence of crude oil inputs? This old argument that if the ships stopped coming here, we would be able to produce an essential amount. Possible or not?
It absolutely is. And I absolutely reject comments to the contrary.
Do you need to reconfigure the plant? What do you need to do?
No, you don't. The simple answer is crude comes in heavy, medium, and light flavours. The New Zealand crude is light. So you can process the New Zealand crude as long as you've got a very small amount of heavy crude, which basically goes round in a circle in the refinery.
Okay, pause. So is it a complete red herring to say that if the ships coming here with refined fuel couldn't make it through, I don't know, the South China Sea or any other route, couldn't get here, well, neither would the crude oil ships and therefore we wouldn't be able to mix it. Can you store on land sufficient crude to hold as a backup?
Oh, definitely. It's quite a small amount because it's just going around in a circle, if you can imagine it.
So who is giving the wrong advice to whom?
I need to be careful what I say on public radio, but in principle, people have not an agenda, if you like a vision for where they want their businesses to run. And it didn't include having an operating refinery in New Zealand, so that's what they drove.
But when I have the Minister of Energy on this program insisting it's not possible, bringing up reconfigurations of whatever, where is that advice coming from? Who's correct?
To ask her that. Well, I operated the refinery for nearly 20 years, so I would suggest I'm the correct one. The pipework exists. It was used many, many times. It's normal in refineries to have that recycle line, as we would call it. So as long as there are a couple of things. You have to make sure that the plant isn't demolished, and you have to make sure you've got a relatively small amount of heavy crude stored in a tank, and then you're able to process as much of the New Zealand crude as you need.
What percentage? What percentage realistically? Because we were discussing keeping the army on the road, keeping the police on the road, and keeping the supermarket supplies on the road. What percentage would be possible?
Oh, you could process all of whatever New Zealand's producing at the time. That obviously depends on what's happening in Taranaki.
But as a percentage of our overall fuel supply, 3%, 5%?
I'm sorry, I don't have the current figures. It used to be about 10%, but I could be wrong. I'm really talking off the top of my head.
I don't know what I appreciate it. It's an answer that is very difficult to get. certainly agreement on. So, again, apologies for putting you on the spot. And thank you for your information. David Keat, Jake Roos.
This is from the Energy and Resources Minister, Megan Woods. We had invited her to appear this morning on the biodiesels matter. She declined our invitation to be interviewed. She says she will give a biofuels update in the coming weeks once she's received further advice from officials following consultation with the sector.